You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. In studio with me is Brandon C. Price. He is the CEO and mastermind behind FAMP, a music, comedy, and drinking show every Friday and Saturday night at 10:30. You can go to vampchicago.com for ticket information. It is one of the best shows performing regularly every weekend in Chicago. So
oh, yeah.
Go see that.
You want humor? You want political commentary? And
go to Springfield.
Satirical form?
Oh, wait.
Well, on your way to Springfield, stop by a drinking show.
I was in Springfield. I did not have the opportunity or the pleasure to watch much of what happened today in the House of Representatives, but perhaps Representative Will Guzzardi can fill me in. How are you doing, Representative?
I'm doing terrific. Great to be on the show.
Thank you so much. And we, by the way, Brandon, we were on the same Amtrak train back. And I felt badly because I saw you on the platform and I go, is that Representative Guzzardi? And someone went, it is. And they went over and bothered you. So I apologize.
You really set me up for that. Thanks a lot.
I didn't. I was just I thought I was talking to myself. And like I didn't realize what it was like in Springfield.
Thank you, citizen.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I got off the train and I went to a bar to meet up my girlfriend and have a drink. And I walked in the bar and someone was like, you're Will Guzzardi, aren't you? I was like, you can't escape it.
Well, you are tall. And I don't mean there, but there's
that's
something
on you, bro.
you do stand out in a crowd. And I do, by the way, nice beard you have going on. And I think now, even more than before, perhaps, I don't know, was it the same before you grew the beard? Because you are sort of recognizable very easily from a distance.
Yeah. I think I'm going to take that as a compliment.
It is.
All right, great.
Most definitely. It's when you enter a room, it's like, oh, the Representative Guzzardi is here.
Great.
Well, you walked into an event last night with Todd Belcore, who is also a regular on the show, and I was like, oh, the tall dudes are here. Excellent.
Yeah, I know. You get Mike Ferris in the mix, and you really got a couple.
Oh, that dude. Is he taller than you?
He is. It eats me up.
Because you're 6'6", I'm going to guess. Yes?
I'm 6'5", yeah.
6'5". Frerichs is like 6'8" or something ridiculous. Very tall guy. So tell us a little bit about what happened, because I couldn't make it. I was trying to find my glasses. No joke. 2 hours trying to find my glasses. But I heard that there was a bill that did not succeed to pay those who help the disabled, to help pay them in a better hourly wage. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we ran a few of these bills during the last legislative session this past spring. Yeah, to raise the wages for people who are doing some of the most important work. I mean, these are people who are caring for people with disabilities. Their average pay is $9 an hour, and they can't fill the jobs. 30% of these jobs are vacant right now because you can make a better paycheck working at McDonald's or Walmart. And, you know, if this is the kind of work that we're asking people to do, it's incredibly difficult, taxing work. You know, I think we ought to be compensating it at some sort of basic level of decency. But my Republican colleagues disagreed, as has been the case on many of these issues. One of my colleagues said on the floor, you know, well, we should let the market decide the wages for these folks. Well, the market is saying it should be $9 an hour. And frankly, I disagree with the market on this one. But they got their way. They sustained the veto of the governor. So once again, you know, the Republicans and Governor Rauner sent a nice, loud, and clear message to people making $9 an hour, which is that we think that's what you deserve.
Well, when someone says the market, I want to talk about that for just a moment, because I presume they're saying the free market. But in the free market, you know, CEOs and money managers, these portfolio managers, they decide their own salaries. And so everything else is determined, we say, by the market. But so they also establish the market and their own pays, and then, like, everybody else can go suck it. So I'm not entirely sure what that means. And if there are 30% of those jobs that are not being filled, and you want to lure people to it, well, then the market is saying it needs to be higher. Isn't the market inherently saying 30% of these jobs are going unfilled, so we should pay people more so they do them?
That's absolutely right. And listen, I mean, I'm of the mind, this is maybe heresy, but the reason why we have minimum wage laws in the first place is because the market doesn't always work. You know, the market incentives for these corporations, especially the big ones who are controlling so many jobs in this country, right? And when people are desperate for work and we have an unemployment crisis, and particularly in low-income communities, right? The market says to them, you've got a valuable commodity and you can value it wherever you want, right? And like, if it weren't for minimum wage laws, these guys would be paying $2 an hour. it is our responsibility as public servants, as guardians of the public good, to intervene when the market is screwing people over. And, you know, in the case of people who are doing such vitally important work, they are really being punished by the market right now. And I think it's our job to step in and change things.
So I'm just trying to wrap my mind around this. Your colleagues on the other side of the aisle determined that people who work with the intellectually and physically disabled are not more valuable in the state of Illinois, that they aren't doing important work, and so that they can take care of their own families. And I don't know if I'm sure that you had people testify of what the work entails. But if someone is working with an individual who cannot care for themselves, that means that they are bathing them, they are feeding them, they are helping them go to the bathroom. And that, now try to imagine moving somebody in order to help them to take care of themselves. And you essentially are providing essential life benefits. And I don't,
not to mention the patience that is required for a caregiver,
right?
Like
that's
that.
Right.
The mental toll that it takes. Oh, let me add them. Let me add them, Representative.
Okay. What's the actual counterpoint? Like, okay, so let the market decide sounds like a stop talking to me about it. You know what I mean? But like, what is the actual, this is why we say this from
well,
the other side.
And you know what? I will be more charitable to their side here than I have to. You know, what they're saying is that the state doesn't have the money to pay. And in some fundamental way, they're not wrong about that, right? We are in a revenue crisis right now in Illinois, and we don't have enough money to pay the bills we've got. And it would indeed cost the state probably another $150 million or so to do this. So the Republicans, many of my Republican colleagues, said, and I take them at their word on this. They said, we would love to pay these folks more. We understand the importance of their work, but in the current budget environment, we can't do it. Now, to me, that last bit is really a cop-out, because if that's really how you feel, if you really feel so strongly that this work is important and ought to be compensated, then let's raise some revenue. Let's raise the money we need to pay these folks, right? Let's raise the money we need to pay for all of the basic services that we're not providing right now as a state. And I know that, Republicans are dead set against raising revenue and taxes are anathema to them. I know a lot of my colleagues on my side of the aisle too aren't that keen on saying the T word, you know. But the fact of the matter is our state is desperate, and people in need are suffering profoundly. And Bruce Rauner just reported, made a nice big public show of it, that he brought in $180 million in income last year from planned stocks. And you know what? I think he could have done a little bit more for the people of the state of Illinois. I think folks like him at the very top of the totem pole who are doing better than ever, boy, they could be paying a little bit higher tax rate to provide for a $15 an hour minimum wage for the folks who are caring for our seniors and people with disabilities.
And that's another thing, is that the state of Illinois had an income tax, but it was temporary at 5%, which was allowed to lapse last year. In the bill that was presented was in order to help with education, and now people are complaining about education. Well, that was how we were going to pay for education, was to maintain that that tax.
Yeah.
So I mean, and at 5%, there are a lot of people in the state of Illinois who believe they're being overtaxed in their income taxes. Mm. Unless you live in the state of Florida, are the people in the state of Illinois paying more in income tax than other states?
So that's a really good question. And you're right that we're not paying more in income tax. In fact, Illinois is a very low income tax state, particularly if you're rich, right? So our neighboring states, most of them have a graduated rate. So you pay, just like at the federal level, you pay a lower rate for lower incomes and a higher rate for higher incomes. Wisconsin does this, Missouri, Kentucky. You know, our neighboring states all do this. Illinois doesn't. We have a constitutionally mandated flat income tax. And the result of that is that we end up nickel and diming people all over the place with all kinds of other taxes and fees because we're such a low income tax state. So, you know, people are concerned about their property taxes being high, especially out in the suburbs. And they're right to be concerned. The reason the property taxes are high is because the state's not paying for schools. The state is not funding public education at nearly an adequate level, so the local districts have to do it through the property tax. So because we're a low-income tax state, we got to raise sales tax, property tax, gas tax, you know, the speeding cameras, the red light cameras, all these ways of digging into the pockets of middle-class people, of working-class people, because we're not doing enough on the income tax to ask the guys at the top to pay their share.
So, is that normal for a flat tax or any tax rate to be constitutionally set from the get-go? Is that how a lot of states are? Or are we weird for that?
That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to it. I would imagine that most states can just change their tax structure with a regular old law rather than having to amend the Constitution as we would have to. And that's, you know, that's been a big challenge, but that's sort of my crusade, to be honest with you. I will talk about a progressive income tax and amending the Constitution until I'm done in Illinois politics. It is, I think, the most important thing we could do to make life easier for poor folks and working folks and to raise the revenue we need to make, like, serious investments in our state and our people.
So how much more is required to amend the Constitution in the state of Illinois than to just pass a bill?
That's a great question. So we just amended the Constitution to set aside money for the road fund. So it's a considerably heavier lift. You need super majorities in both chambers. So instead of 60 representatives in the House, which is the majority, you need 71. And instead of 30 senators, you need 36. And then it goes to a vote of the general public, and you need 60% of the public to vote in favor of it in an election. So it's, you know, there's a lot of work to do there, but I tell you, I'm certain that more than 60% of the people in this state think that they deserve a tax cut and that the guys at the top ought to pay a little bit more. And that's what this is.
Well, that was a question that was on the ballot when Governor Rauner ran, if people supported a millionaire's tax. And they supported it more people supported that than the number of people who voted for Governor Rauner.
Overwhelmingly, yes. 65% of Illinoisans supported that idea of a small surcharge on incomes over $1 million to go toward education. I think it's a fantastic idea, but we can't do it until we amend the Constitution. Again, we tried to do this last year, and the Republicans stood in the way, you know, universally, to a man, to a woman. Every member of the Republican caucus refused to support taxing rich people at a higher rate and giving a tax break to middle-class families. You know, they have consistently and taken the governor's side, and the governor's side is the side of the wealthy and corporate interests who lined his pocket.
So
I have to take a break. No. Brandon, you can ask more questions, and I want to see if the representative Will Guzzardi can hold on the line. And we want Brandon has another question. I want to talk weed. Does that work?
Yeah, sounds great.
More with Representative Will Guzzardi when we come back. 312-981-7200 if you want to join the conversation by phone or by text. We'll be back in just a second.
Vinyl expert Jim Hanke shares some of the very cool stuff.
Maybe, are we living in a gangster's paradise, Representative Guzzardi? How you doing? I'm not calling the governor gangsta. I'm just saying.
Oh boy!
I just showed Brendan C. Price some of your photos because he Googled you and asked if which I showed him the more updated picture because you need to get some more of your more bearded look out there, sir.
Mm.
Yeah, throw that beard on the Twitter profile.
Is that an endorsement of the bearded look?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right, I'll take it.
Big thumbs up on the beard. I know that Brandon had a question before the break. I want to make sure we get to that.
I was just going to – so the actual thought process behind wanting to never change this tax when the Republicans, some of your Republican colleagues, never wanting to change that tax and make that amendment, is that just based on the idea that the money will, like Reagan, trickle down? Like, what's the actual argument? Because it's like back and forth, and you hear both sides, and it's just this ridiculous hula hoop that never ends, and we just keep getting hit by it, in the face by it.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to do justice to the argument. I mean, they'll say, oh, all the rich people are going to leave, which is just a total myth. And you look at states like New Jersey or Minnesota where this has been done, and of course, all the rich people don't leave. There's no good argument for it. And it's rooted exactly, as you say, in this Reaganomics idea that the way we're going to fix this country is put money in the pockets of rich people, and they're the job creators, and it will trickle on down to the rest of us. Well, it's been 40 years of Reaganomics in this country, and I think most people are still waiting for our trickle. And you know what? I told this the other day, you know, there's a great Mitch Hedberg joke. You guys, Mitch Hedberg fans?
You're asking the right. I worked with Mitch Hedberg, but continue.
I asked my fans.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so you probably know this joke where he talks about, he says, I went to the pizza parlor and I asked for a slice of pizza. And he gave me the smallest pizza they had, the smallest slice that was there. If the pizza was a pie chart of what you would do if you got $1 million, he gave me the give it to charity slice.
Right?
You know, I'd like to exchange it for the keep it.
I'm so tickled that you are quoting Mitch Hedberg. You are officially the first legislator on the show that has quoted one of my favorite comics and a sweet guy who died too soon.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's sad thinking about it. But, you know, the reason for me saying this is that, like, what happened when we gave all the money to the wealthiest people in this country and expected it to just trickle down to the rest of us? They kept it. They took the keep it slice, you know? And in fact, wealthy people have gotten much, much wealthier in the last 30, 40 years in this country. And the rest of us aren't seeing any growth at all in our income, right? So, in fact, we're seeing costs go up and feels like the paycheck doesn't go as far. So I think it's time for us to abandon this idea that somehow this magical trickle is going to come for us, that these wealthy folks are suddenly going to, you know, see the light of, you know, the warm, the milk of human kindness is going to suddenly start flowing down for all of us. If we want poor people to have more money, we should give more money to poor people. We shouldn't give it to rich people and hope it comes down, right?
No, I had a guess, and let's call him Pumpkin. Let's call him Joe. Joe said that we have to trust the companies when they get these tax breaks and Donald Trump has the, you know, gives them the opportunity to repatriate their money that's gone overseas, that they will do, they will provide the jobs and infrastructure that they have promised. We have to trust them to do that.
Well, that's one thing I should do and everyone should do is that's trust everyone blindly all the time.
Representative Will Guzzardi is on the line with us. Can we trust that you'll hold on for a moment? We're going to do the news, and I will figure this out. Maybe we'll call you back.
My pleasure to hold on.
Because we still haven't talked weed. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me here live is Brendan C. Price, and on the line is Representative Will Guzzardi, who represents the 39th District, I believe. Is that right? I don't want to get that wrong. The 39th.
Correct.
What are the neighborhoods in your area?
So Logan Square, Belmont Cragen, Portage Park, a little bit of Avondale, Hermosa.
And when you decided to run for office, how long have you had this office, by the way?
This is my first term, so I'm just finishing up year two.
So when do you have? Are you running again? I mean, when do you decide?
I was recently reelected.
Oh, okay.
With 100% of the vote, it was a thrilling win.
Congratulations, Mike. Brandon C. Price is trying to figure out how that happened. I'm guessing unopposed.
Uncontested? Yeah,
unopposed. That'd be it.
That's
flattering in itself. No one even thought they could be.
They looked at Will Guzzardi. They went, "Nope, not even going to bother. Not going to touch it. I'm just going to put down my guns and step away." What made you decide to run for office?
I'll tell you, I was the first time I ran was 2012. I was 24 years old. I was working at the Huffington Post in Chicago doing local news for them. And there were two things that really got me into this. One was I was covering a lot of local progressive elections for city council, for state legislature, and I met all these young people who were working on these races who were incredibly excited about the prospect of unseating the sort of old school Chicago machine folks and bringing in a new generation of leadership that had a different way of thinking about what the Democratic Party could be. And the other piece is that I was watching what was going on in Springfield, and I was seeing Democrats in charge of the legislature, a Democrat in the governor's mansion, and yet we were given these huge tax breaks to the biggest corporations, to, you know, Sears and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and Caterpillar and all these guys, giant tax breaks for them, and cuts in programming to people in need. And it's like, are these Democrats? You know, it's like the Republican way of doing business. So I ran in a Democratic primary against a representative who was sort of part of the traditional political establishment. And I was a 24-year-old kid who was, you know, nobody knew and nobody cared about. And I lost the first time. We got like 49.5% of the vote. We ran an amazing grassroots campaign. We had an incredible group of volunteers working with us. We came very close to winning. And I was really proud of the result. And then 2 years later, I ran again. I won 60-40, and now here I am.
Should have had an electoral college on that first one.
Maybe a little vote rigging, you know. I should have hacked the computers or something.
Well, that Brandon brings up an interesting moment in our time. What do you think about the Democratic Party right now? And I think that I would wager that you had a lot of strong thoughts before, you know, even the primaries with the Democratic Party. Where do you think the Democrats are now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And I was, you know, I was a delegate to the Democratic Convention for Senator Sanders and a big supporter of his during the primaries. I think the Democrats in Illinois have the same problem Democrats nationally do.
Yes.
Pat Quinn ran against Bruce Rauner in 2014 and said, "Don't vote for that guy. He's dangerous." And that was pretty much all he said. And what happened? He got his butt kicked because Bruce Rauner said, "You know, I've got a plan for how to fix Illinois." And I think a lot of voters said, "Well, I don't know about his plan. It involves, you know, lowering people's wages and making guys like him make more money." But the Democrats don't seem to have a plan at all. So I'll try some plan over no plan at all, right? And that's the exact same thing that happened to us nationally in this last election. I think the moment right now for Democrats, it's the moment for us to have an agenda, to tell people what we think is wrong in this state, in this country, and how we plan to fix it. And we've got great answers. What we think is wrong is the thing I was talking about before, the fact that these rich guys have more money than ever and the rest of us are getting screwed. And our plan to fix it is to ask them to pay a little bit extra in taxes and use that money to make our lives better, to lower our property taxes, to make college more affordable, to lift people up from the bottom up, right, the values that the Democrats should stand for. So I think you're going to see from certainly from me and from a lot of my colleagues, and I think from Democratic leadership going into next year, I think you're going to see a more sort of aggressive, assertive agenda of the things that we believe in, the things we want to do for this state.
And with that, one of the things that we're all grappling with is the difference in that map when you saw the turnout, the results, was the, how the blue, the Democratic vote was really isolated, you know, was really concentrated in the urban areas, and a lot of the rural areas went red. And I was sitting, you know, whenever I sit in the press box and I listen to the arguments, you know, Chicago comes up a lot as a point of contention of if you're from Chicago, this would be great for you. Is there a way to bridge that? And I don't mean, look, we're never going to get each other entirely. You know, things that are important to Chicagoans are different than what's important to people in smaller towns. It doesn't make either one of them less important, less valuable, less significant. But what's I have to believe that what is good for Chicago is good for Illinois, and what is good for Illinois is good for Chicago. And I don't know how we get there.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. One of the interesting things I thought about this election was that Secretary Clinton actually won a fair number of counties outside of Cook County. You know, she won in Champaign, she won in Peoria, she won in Rock Island, she won in, you know, Will and DuPage. I mean, some of these suburban counties where there's a lot of Republican representation. But you're right. The thing is that we've got to set aside these sort of like the urban-rural divide. The fact of the matter is that rural folks in downstate Illinois are suffering from the exact same kinds of crises that folks on the south and west sides of Chicago are suffering from, folks in my neighborhood are suffering. We're talking about the only kind of jobs that there are low-wage jobs, right? High levels of unemployment. And then in these kinds of disinvested communities, people turn to drugs and violence, right? And we've seen a tremendous uptick, of course, in opioid use in downstate Illinois. When you turn your back on communities, bad things happen. And I think we need to start talking about how we can invest in people in every corner of the state to make sure the communities start picking up again, to revitalize our communities all around the state.
You're talking about for the Democratic Party, though, like really defining the agenda, really like this is actually what we stand for. This is what's going on. If you were vague before, this is clear.
Yeah.
My two questions there are, one, is that not does that not have the chance to make it even more polarized, like almost like you're digging in and standing the ground? And two, outside of that, how, whether the message is well received or not, how do we get it to those people? Because I'm from a very rural area of the South, and I can guarantee you, well, one, who they all voted for, but also two, that they had no, that Fox News was the only, if they had cable, was the only way they heard anything about anything. So if you're not on Twitter, if you're not, like, you know, dedicated to looking at your phone 24/7 and researching, how do I make it easier for everyone to understand the agendas you're talking about and why voting that way might help them?
Yeah. And so I want to address both parts of that question. On the one hand, I think there are some areas in which we can't we have to polarize, right? We can't act like there's some sort of middle ground or consensus in some of these areas. And I'm talking about things like racism and bigotry and xenophobia and, you know, immigrant bashing and the Muslim registry. Like, we can't say, oh, we can meet you halfway on that stuff. We have to draw some hard lines in the sand. And frankly, I think a lot of people voted for Donald Trump who believe in those things, but a whole lot of people, I think, voted for him who don't want to see us building a wall with Mexico or making Muslims have an ID badge. You know, who voted for him because they thought that he's going to be the guy who's going to bring the manufacturing jobs back, right? Where were Democrats on that issue? You know, we were pretty much silent. The fact is, it's complicated, and Donald Trump wants to make it simple, but that was successful. How do we reach folks? I think it starts with making a concerted effort to have something to say, right? That I think too often we all like to just talk to ourselves, right? And we haven't challenged ourselves to hear from the other side and to make an effort to sort of bridge that divide. And if there's any lesson that the Democratic Party should take away from this, it's that we can win these folks over, but we have to start talking to them, you know, and not making excuses for the inexcusable, but reaching people, particularly on the economic issues, where Democrats have a really strong, compelling message.
I have two listeners on the line, so it seems as though I do have to keep you until 1 o'clock if you'll hang out for another segment.
You're trying to talk to me about cannabis, I think.
I know, and I keep wanting to talk about weed.
Down the road.
I know.
You forgot what we were going to talk about, man.
Dude, give me some more chips. We are talking to Representative Will Guzzardi. He represents the 39th District, and we are taking your calls. We have Joe and Donna on the line. We'll get to you as soon as we come back from this break in just a moment. 312-981-7200. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Brandon C. Price. He is the CEO and mastermind behind Vamp, a music comedy and drinking show every Friday and Saturday night at 10:30. Go to vampchicago.com for more information. Joining us on the line is Representative Will Guzzardi. He represents the 39th District, including neighborhoods like Park Ridge. I know it's Logan Square, Portage Park, parts of old Irving Park, yes?
A little bit of Old Irving, that's right, yeah.
Avondale and Albany Park, all those areas. We have two listeners on the line who wanted to join the conversation. Let's, Donna, how are you doing?
Hi, Donna.
Yes, hi, Donna.
Okay.
Hi.
Yes. One of the reasons that people are abandoning the Democratic Party is, for instance, my issue that I had brought up. I called a couple months ago about this, the Social Security offset rule. Either the legislators don't know about it, or they dismiss it. They think it's only a few hundred people. I have to come on the air and educate my legislators that you can work 20 years private industry, 20 years as a teacher, and never get your Social Security and wind up in poverty. And this has been going on for decades. And this is why we get dismissed, or they don't even know that this is happening. Why isn't this changing? This has been since Reagan, and Illinois is only one of 10 states that's doing this.
Are you familiar?
I am. Yeah, no, it's a very serious problem, and you know, I think it's the demonizing of public employees has been it's been a long task, long project of particularly people on the other side of the aisle. But yeah, this is just one of many ways in which public employees are often vulnerable in retirement, right? Because their Social Security benefits.
This is one of many ways which the Democratic Party doesn't do anything. This is nothing new. For decades, I've been eyeing other people.
Donna, hold on a second. Earlier when he said, I think the reason he made that noise was that he was listening and wasn't sure if you were done. But now that he's talking, let's listen to the rest of what he's saying. Go ahead.
No. I agree with you. And look, like I said, I ran for office in the first place because I was frustrated about the Democratic Party not sticking up for us. And I think still in so many ways, the party hasn't done its responsibility for the people who we're supposed to be serving, right? And you see some of our traditional bases of support leaving us because we haven't delivered. And this is exactly what you're talking about, Donna, I think. And I think that if the Democratic Party wants to survive and thrive and govern again, we got to start taking care of senior citizens like we promised to do. We got to start taking care of people of color like we promised to do. You know, we have to start investing in working families like we've committed to doing. And I think this particular issue is very serious, and I don't mean to sort of lump it together with all these other things. But I think it's just the Social Security offset problem is just one example of a problem in which Democrats haven't stuck up for their core constituencies.
Well, glad to hear you're going to do something about it. Yay.
Yes, ma'am.
Donna, we spoke before. Who is your representative?
I'm in the Logan Square area, too, and I taught in the Logan Square area.
So is Representative Gazzardi your representative? I believe I talked to you, and I think I told you that when we were on the line, didn't I?
Yes. Yeah.
And you have called his office?
I've worked for the Logan Square Association, you know, those people and everything. But this is something that's been going that I've been fighting for decades.
Right.
Because it affected my mother, too. So now she died and had a poor quality of life. And now I'm going to die and have a poor quality of life. When is this going to change?
Well, and I'm glad you called while your representative is on the line. And I encourage you, as I do every time I talk about Springfield.
Oh, yes. I'm very active.
Yes. Yeah, so you two are familiar with each other then?
I'm not one-on-one, but I mean, you know, I write letters, I do all that stuff.
Drop me an email. My email address is just will@willgazzardi.com. It's really easy to remember. Shoot me a note, and I'll follow up with you about this.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Okay.
Great.
Terrific.
There you go.
We'll work on it. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Donna.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. Always good to hear from you, Donna. Thank you. And also always good to hear from our friend Joe. Hey, Joe, how are you doing?
Good, Punkin.
You're Punkin. I'm Kiddo.
Reverse it. Hey, listen, this might have bearing on just what Donna was talking about. And this is your loyal, as you know, trusting and acynical listener and contributor at times. The topic is pensions. As you folks know, back in the 40s and 50s, if memory serves me correctly, the private sector enjoyed pensions to the tune of pushing 50%. I think 48% of the population was the high point. Now it's less than 5%. I think it's 3 and some change. Mm. The question overall, and it's a biggie, is when, if ever, are we going to consider, you know, satisfying Donna in a respect here, the public sector employees on a 401k quasi-Social Security 50-50 scenario? Get them into the real world is what I'm saying.
Let me tell you, I've spoken to a lot of people who have been knocking on doors, talking to folks about these issues, and mm-hmm. I've heard folks say, listen, you know, private sector, we don't get pensions anymore.
Right.
So, you know, those guys shouldn't either. And the thing that I try to respond to folks when they say that is, I don't think that is the kind of attitude that we want to have about society, right? Like, you have this nice thing. I used to have the nice thing. I don't have it anymore. So you shouldn't have it either, gosh darn it. The fact is, a pension, when it's done right, is a great way to guarantee that people have a decent quality of life in their retired years. And the fact that the private sector has abandoned pensions and put your money at risk in the stock market, we need to be demanding why you don't have a pension, right? It's not how come they have it so nice. It's how come your employer isn't taking care of you in the same way, right? Why don't we have 50% of private sector workers having pensions anymore? Like, right? It's because the profit motive is out of control in this country. And rather than guaranteeing a decent retirement for their workforce, they say, oh, we can't afford it. We're going to put your money on the stock market and you get what you get. That's the injustice we should be talking about, not the fact that we've decided to guarantee teachers a decent quality of life once they retire. I don't think that's I don't think it's worth going down that road.
See, and that's the thing that a lot of people struggle with is trying to understand the pensions and the promises made. So before we go, because now it's one, I'm not going to keep you past 1 o'clock. just and we'll this will be a part of a bigger conversation. But I know I was there when you introduced a bill just to do some to do a study on the possibility of. I mean, that was a dramatic day. They were making noises like torpedoes and missiles were coming at you, and you possibly almost won like the Turkey Award or something for possibly being voted down the most. But it was just a study to find out about the possibility of introducing recreational marijuana in the state of Illinois, right?
Yes, that's right. it was. I'll tell you the story that day some other time on the show. But,
okay.
I'll say briefly that the results of this past election, we saw states around the country, from Massachusetts to Arkansas, voters overwhelmingly approved measures to allow greater access to cannabis for medical patients or for recreational use. I mean, the fact of the matter is it has driven tremendously bad outcomes in the criminal justice system. We're criminalizing a huge sector of the commerce in our state, and it's money that we could be putting in our tax coffers and paying for really important public investments. So I think that's a conversation that's coming in Illinois, and I look forward to having it.
And I look forward to you introducing another study, because I hope that I hope it's as dramatic but less. I hope it's less painful. How's that?
Fair enough.
Was it painful that day, or was it just kind of like, okay, this is happening? Did you expect it to go that weirdly?
No, there was beef between the parties, and then
we'll get into it.
I'll tell you, like I said, it's a long story.
Okay.
Short version is I caught them on a bad day. Everyone was grouchy.
It's true.
You know what they could have used, man.
Why don't we all just kick back with a bag of Doritos, everyone? Chill
there
out.
There you go.
That's Representative Will Guzzardi. You can follow him on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
At Will Guzzardi. Keep it simple.
Keep it simple and find his website. Google him. Just start with typing Will and Guzzardi the way you think it's spelled.
Can I put in one more quick plug?
Of course.
On Facebook, go to Illinois Fights Hate. It's a new Facebook page we just started tonight, a Facebook group, I should say, trying to get people together who are upset about the results of the election, who are concerned about the safety of their neighbors and their community, and want to band together and make Illinois a place that stands up for equality and for the protection of everyone. So,
what's the name again?
Community we're starting, Illinois Fights Hate. We're really excited about the work we're going to do.
Well, I appreciate that, because your colleague, Representative John Cabello, says that he has not heard from anyone who is afraid, and if they are afraid, they are being ridiculous. Again, you can go to my Facebook page, and I have posted the number for Representative John Cabello's office, both in Springfield and in Rockford, in the event that he has not heard from you recently. Thank you so much, Representative Guzzardi.
Thank you. Great to be on the show.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you again soon. I've got to take a quick break. I'm a little bit late for the news, but it was a great conversation. I'm glad that you guys joined us.